Welcome to the Pharmacy Inspection Podcast, where we discuss topics related to sterile and non-sterile compounding pharmacy in an effort to promote compliance and increase quality. The Pharmacy Inspection Podcast is a member of the Pharmacy Podcast Network, delivering quality and meaningful conversations and discussions about our pharmacy industry and the critical role pharmacists play in our healthcare systems. Learn more at pharmacypodcast.com. Please welcome your hosts, Brian Prince and Seth DePasquale.
Hello to all of our compounding friends and colleagues, and thank you for joining us again on the Pharmacy Inspection Podcast. It's a show dedicated to discussing topics related to sterile and non-sterile compounding, compliance and how we're encountering that right now, quality standards, safety, and all of those fun things that we have right now in the compounding industry. This week, we're actually going to circle back to an overarching thing from previous weeks, education. And the role that education and its importance in our industry. And so we're welcoming my good friend Greg Stoll from the Accreditation University, which is a division of the ACHC. I have had the honor of working alongside Greg and his team, different conferences and over the years, and it's such a pleasure. So we welcome Greg and we thank him for joining us. Greg, tell us about yourself and some of your career highlights.
Well, sounds great, guys. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to come and to spend time with you today. My career path in this is probably not dissimilar to many folks. This was not on the radar, not exactly what I thought was going to happen as I was in college, but things happen. And I started in 1981, had the opportunity to own a small DME company in pharmacy. We later moved into doing really all aspects, infusion later on, and many things, and really have spent my career managing either my own local or regional companies that really had a diverse portfolio of the things that they had done. Somewhere along that path, of course, accreditation became a thing. I took my company through it in 1987, but as it became more and more, I had the opportunity to get accredited and surveyed by ACHC. I felt that the experience that I had was different and unique from what I had experienced with other accrediting organizations. And when I had the chance to sell my business, I ended up going to work for ACHC. I started off as a surveyor, doing surveys within the scope of expertise that I have, which, you know, compounding was not in that. But then as PCAB became part of the ACHC family, Joe Caballero and others that were part of that came in. We started teaching classes on that. And when I took over education here at ACHC about 5 years ago, all of our programs from nursing to durable medical equipment to pharmacy and all aspects of our pharmacy programs came under my department. Probably 3 years ago, our board really challenged us to invest more in our customer success, where we felt like that we were a quality accreditor and that we provided a quality accreditation product. We really weren't participating in an organization's success on the front end. Good at assessing their compliance while we were there, but really not participating in their success. So we started a division of ACHC and PCAB called Accreditation University, really focused on developing tools and training and education around helping people get ready for their accreditation. So that's kind of in a nutshell my exposure to the industry, how I ended up at ACHC and PCAB, and what I'm doing now running our education division.
So, Greg, that's a great lead-in, talking about the training, the tools, the education, the mission behind, you know, AU. Because in weeks previous, from when we were live at the ACA conference and even the weeks before that with actually having Joe and Bill on the show and Brenda and Jim and just all, you know, the wonderful group of folks we have in this industry, there's been a reoccurring theme over and over, and it's that of education. And I know that that's a real passion of yours because you drive that aspect of education there at the AU. So Tell us kind of your thoughts on the current state and maybe even the future state of education and the role that it's going to play in healthcare, compounding, and all the things that you've got going on there.
Well, and if I can start off with just kind of my own personal experience, you know, as a surveyor, when I would go in and I would look at a pharmacy and I would go in and look at their practices, my experience taught me that generally speaking, pharmacies really want to do things right. Rare that you run into an owner that would, you know, tell you right up front that that is not their desire. So what are the gaps? Well, the gaps are in most small businesses, they're strapped for resources, strapped for time. Their focus is on meeting patient and customer needs, but the time that they have available to focus on quality in all aspects of the business is very, you know, limited. So when you look at, you know, the education piece, what happens with myself as an owner and many of the owners out there, they really are putting themselves in a situation where they've got to rely on their staff to help them drive quality and to have the same passion that the owners do. And we know the owners do. We know they want to do it right. But how well has that been translated down to their staff? So ultimately, the gap is not the desire to do it right. The gap is the knowledge of the folks to do it right. You know, and you know, PCAB rarely goes in and cites a compounding deficiency that is just blatant neglect of 797 or 7095 requirements. Rarely. I mean, there are those occasions where it come up. Generally speaking, it's almost always a gap in understanding, knowledge, or application of that knowledge into the practices that they're there. So education ultimately is going to be, we're all ongoing continual learners, but it really translates more into us running our businesses and running our business efficiently enough and safely enough that we are not exposing ourselves from a risk, a perspective of not everybody in the business being on the same page that we are in that commitment to quality.
So speaking of Accreditation University developing and offering educational programs, how do you guys go about doing that? What's the structure of your content? Do you offer online stuff? Do you just do it in person? What are some of the offerings that you guys are doing now and some that you're looking to do in the future?
You know, Seth, we weren't looking to reinvent the wheel. Obviously, if there's great educational programs out there for our compounders, we want to do everything that we can to support that. And we've got some good programs that are out there, some great consultants that do really fine work in this area. But the approach that we kind of took was to look at our actual survey data. So assuming that our PCAB pharmacies want to do it right, but yet there are still gaps then, if we go back and we look at the actual survey data and we pull data over a three-year period and say, are there consistencies in what we're seeing? And there certainly are some themes out there. And what we've tried to do is we've tried to put together programs that help fill in some of those gaps. One of those areas that we certainly spend a lot of time in is workshops, where we will take a topic, and Brian participates in those workshops frequently for us, and we'll take particular topics. It may be strictly around sterile compounding, non-sterile, or in programs that we do where Brian's involved, USP 800 compliance. And we'll take that data, and we have built one-day programs because we know it's hard to get people out of the office for very long, but we do get them together with their colleagues in one place together, and we go through the information and we try to share the data that we have found. And we have found that getting everybody together focused and concentrated in that space is certainly very beneficial. Now, we do have other tools. We don't have as many online offerings as today as we will in the future. But we do have some tools and some other things out there that are available for them. But our workshops today tend to be kind of that primary opportunity for us to engage with the compounders to really help make sure that they understand the requirements and the application of those requirements into their pharmacy.
Getting to participate in the workshops is such a huge benefit for not just me and, you know, John, who are standing in the front and we're talking about these things, but it's the actual feedback that we get from the participants, because oftentimes we'll hear from some different perspectives. And you remember recently we were out in Salt Lake City. We got a lot of wonderful engagement, even around, you know, some of the simple issues that I haven't been able to typically nail down within workflow, like how to properly de-dust capsules. That's the thing that has baffled me for a long time, right? Because that could be a potential exposure point on the front end dispensing. And so what happens? Folks that are within our audience jump out and give us the solutions, and everybody's kind of like, wow, that's a great idea. So the workshops are definitely beneficial, no doubt about it. Matter of fact, we've got one coming up this week. So we're going to head down to Cary, and it's part of kind of a PCAB readiness workshop, which is day one. And then day two, where I get to participate, is the USP 800, where we really demystify it and we go all the way through it, but we keep it into those 1 day manageable bites. But for me, and I know probably for you, Greg, and if John were here, he'd say the exact same thing, is that it's a great opportunity for collaboration amongst people, your peers. And you're right, because we keep it within 1 day, it's much more manageable than sending somebody out to a 3 to 5 day conference and then having to worry about that. I know, Seth, you had that issue when we went out to the American College of Apothecaries conference down in Florida recently, is it? You had to find another PIC to take your place to watch over the pharmacy. So I'll kind of park there, because I know there's probably some thoughts between the two of you on that.
Well, I can just say, Brian, having sat through your classes numerous times, and you've been, I think, doing these classes with us now for a couple of years, and I just appreciate the fact that we take these theories that are out there that you know, I myself have had to try to learn, and I've tried to understand, because that compounding piece is not my background. And you and John do a great job of bringing that down to my pharmacy, to my facility, to the things that I am compounding there, and really help me develop a strategy of how I take this information back to my own pharmacy. And often, I think, in the education, that is the missing component. This is not about regurgitation of information. This is about application of that into my particular pharmacy and helping me understand these strategies. And I think you do a great job at that. And, you know, we'll do it this week in Cary. We'll do it in about, I guess it's another month or two, up at Fairleigh Dickinson University, where we'll do this again. And that's a repeat of last year. And the feedback that we get is fantastic. So we just really appreciate the opportunity to engage with our customers, but also to see them engage with each other and to brainstorm and to problem solve and to really go back with practical solutions to their pharmacy that are, you know, really not only beneficial, there's a cost benefit to that, there's a safety benefit to that, there's certainly risk mitigation to that, and it's really great to see that type of collaboration.
When you go up to Fairleigh Dickinson, do you use their labs? Is that a hands-on course?
We do. Now, it you know, Brian will tell you, it's not hands-on like some of the courses that we have all been involved in. It's probably more from a demonstration perspective, trying to as Brian talks about workflow and some of the implications of the standards or the requirements with USP. Brian and John will use that downstairs to demonstrate the implications of those decisions. And workflow is obviously an area of great concern for all of us, because you know, we have to produce at the end of the day and make sure that we're meeting our compound needs. But they do have a great facility there. They have been a great partner for us. And we have very much enjoyed the opportunity to utilize their demonstration lab there and do use that as part of our class.
Yeah, we'll be there on July 17th and 18th. And day one is going to be where, again, it's part of the PCAB readiness workshop. And then day two will be all about USP 800. And that's on the 18th. And you can choose to come either day, or you can come both days. We'd love to have you for both. But the Fairleigh Dickinson, that School of Pharmacy, it's awesome. They've got some state-of-the-art equipment. They've got, you know, video opportunities, but they've actually got a mock working lab. And so when we went in there, Jeffrey Reese is actually one of the surveyors. He actually did a garbing demonstration and had the active participation where folks could say, you did that right, you did that wrong. And so it really was an interactive. But as for a hands-on, it's a little bit of a modified hands-on. So I ask that you, if you're looking to get some continuing education, come definitely join us in July up in New Jersey at the Fairleigh Dickinson School of Pharmacy there. It'll be a wonderful time. But I will echo that the application, and this is what you said earlier, Greg, is that the application is super important. And so when I teach a principle, I like to have that real life application. And I tell folks when I teach workflows, I'm going to give you some real solutions that you can go back and implement right now. That's going to cost you little to no money whatsoever, but it will dramatically improve the cleanliness, the safety, the quality, the standard in which you handle chemicals moving forward. And I think that's where one of the added benefits comes, that people have to walk away. And I know we've got a lot of wonderful feedback because we always get that post-workshop feedback survey filled out from the folks there. And I know we've got a lot of wonderful information. But for the most part, that's what it is. That's what it's about. It's about real application and really demystifying those things that need more explanation. Because I think probably for a new pharmacy jumping into getting PCAB ready, right, wanting to know that they can get that accreditation, which is a big deal for them, it seems overwhelming. Just like USP 800 seems overwhelming. All of these things called compliance seem overwhelming. Well, let's kind of break it down. Let's make it into manageable bites, manageable pieces, and let's completely take the cloud out of it, the fog out of it, whatever that metaphor is, and let's make it easy to understand.
We are, you know, looking at the possibility of doing more of this online. But, you know, Brian, I think that you would agree we will lose that collaborative environment that I think is part of the benefit of coming to these things, is sitting with your colleagues and hearing how they solved a particular problem. And when we go to the online type of training, we're gonna obviously lose some of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've seen groups that were as small as 15, and we've had groups that are as large as, you know, between 40 and 60. And it doesn't matter what size of the group is, there's that collaborative, because, and John does an awesome job facilitating to say, you know, this is impromptu, that if you've got something you want to contribute, let's go ahead and get it out. And folks will do that, and they get, they kind of come out of their shell in that intimate group setting. And it's not intimidating by any means, but some things have come out, like I said earlier about the de-dusting, but just other things have come out that created a conversation. And we would actually end up, you know, John would end up parking himself for what, 15, 20 minutes while we work through that discussion and then while others contribute. So I feel like the collaborative environment is super important. If you're just looking to get CEs, which I understand that is important, then online is probably going to be your best format. But I tell you, never discount collaboration face to face with people, with peers. That is just, to me, it's irreplaceable, and you can't do that online.
Agreed. And of course, we do offer CEs for this, but I think that's almost just an added benefit to not only the great information, but that collaborative environment. But you're also going to hopefully hit some of those CE requirements as well.
Absolutely. So, Greg, it's been an awesome conversation. We're coming up on that time. We always like to respect our listeners' time to try to make sure that they can listen to this kind of on their drive back and forth to work. But we never want to leave out with giving our guest an opportunity to give some advice or just share some things that you'd like to share about the industry. But more so is advice. So if you could give our audience a nugget, something to walk away with, please feel free to share it with us.
You know, just if I can just speak from my own personal experience, when I was the type of business owner that just got caught up in what I called the tyranny of the urgent. It was always about that thing that was immediately in front of me, and I became great at dealing with those issues and putting out that fire and pushing forward. I didn't spend in the early years a lot of business working on my business, and I would have frankly discounted early on things like performance improvement. I would have discounted things like, you know, annual in-services and training. I would have assumed that the same technician that I trained a year ago was still good today. And it's really been through the experiences of going into pharmacies and to hearing the stories that I've really begun to realize that I probably had set myself up for failure in not being able to take the time that it takes to really make sure that the things that I was passionate about that got me started in this business to begin with was being equally translated throughout my staff. So part of it is just personal confession of the fact that I myself didn't spend near enough time working on my business, but in my business. And I would blink and a year would go by and things that were important hadn't been done. Excuse me. That's probably at this phase of my career, fatherly advice to all the youngsters that are out there that are doing this right now. You have to take the time that it takes to really analyze your business, understand your business. And I think the three of us on the phone today would agree a big part of that is ensuring that your staff understands and knows your passions, your desires, your level of expertise and training, and that needs to be translated to them through good, ongoing, quality education and oversight.
I'm sure Seth is grinning a little bit if I could see his face on the other side of the radio mic there. He and I had this conversation not too long ago. And if I've said it once, I've said it 100 times, which is exactly what you said, Greg, is that entrepreneurs, the pharmacy owners, the small business owners, they spend so much time working in the business instead of working on the business. And we fight the fires that burn the brightest. I remember many years, I spent 10 years in the construction business right out of college, and I had a wonderful GM at that time. And I used to say that to him all the time because I saw the guy who was running, and he was wearing so many hats. And that's what today's pharmacy owners are doing. They're wearing so many hats. Is it about accounts payable, accounts receivable? I got to do patient consults. Who didn't show up for work today? What chemicals need to be ordered? You know, dispensing. There's so many different hats that entrepreneurs, small business owners have to worry about. And so, yeah, sometimes we have to step back, just step back and say, okay, what is the direction of this business and how do I go forward? And because we've got to figure out compliance. We've got to figure out education. We've got to figure out those things really that are going to be the drivers of our business moving forward. And yes, we have to fight those daily fires. I can't discount those. But the reality is as entrepreneurs, if we want our businesses to grow, to figure out what that next level, that next step, how, you know, we've got to be able to step back, take off some of those hats, spread them out and go, today I'm going to work on the business and not in the business. So, Greg, I will say that is absolutely, unequivocally wonderful advice. And I certainly appreciate you coming and joining us today on the Pharmacy Inspection Podcast. It's always a pleasure. I'll actually get to see you in a couple of days. I look forward to it.
Look forward to that. Brian, Seth, thank you very much. And thank you for all those that took time to join us today. Really appreciate that chance.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us this week. Thank you, Greg, for coming on the show and speaking with us. We really appreciate it. And in just about a month's time, Brian and I will be in D.C. at Compounders on Capitol Hill. We'll be recording some podcasts there, and we'd really love to meet you guys, so I hope you can join us. Next week on the podcast, we have another guest, Christine Roussel, a pharmacist, a self-proclaimed toxicology nerd. We'll be speaking with Christine about USP 800, hazardous drug plans, and we'll also be talking with her about how she's trying to bring safe work practices to the medical marijuana industry. You don't want to miss it. Until then, keep raising the bar.